Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival this summer. This season, we've designed one of our richest and most enchanting musical journeys yet. Russian Reflections illuminates the great dialogue between Russia and the West, from which Russian classical music grew into one of the most beloved of all musical traditions. Russia's musical culture is as elusive as it is irresistible. The soul of Russian music is impossible to capture with words. It is utterly unique. No one could have invented such a confoundingly glorious tradition. Russia's music is the sui generis expression of her people's experiences. Yet at the same time, many of the elements that distinguish Russian music ultimately defy cultural boundaries: love and death, passion and pathos, struggle and triumph. This summer's seven concert programs bring together Russian and Western composers to magnify the universal resonance of Russia's musical culture. We'll hear the romantic pathos of Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich alongside Schumann, Fauré, and Dvorak. We'll encounter the sophisticated elegance of Tchaikovsky next to music by Mozart and Mendelssohn. We'll marvel at the impeccable craftsmanship of Prokofiev, Taneyev, and Johannes Brahms. Each of these juxtapositions will cast Russia's musical identity into sharp relief, while also revealing an essential character that transcends any cultural divide. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by artistic co-director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
The passion, lyricism, and grace of Tchaikovsky's musical language have enshrined him as Russia's most beloved composer and one of classical music's most cherished voices. Concert Program 3, Elegant Emotion, traces Tchaikovsky's deeply personal style back to Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, whose D major string quintet demonstrates the beauty and elegance that so entranced the Russian composer. The program offers music by another of Mozart's spiritual descendants, Felix Mendelssohn, whose string quartet, Opus 44, No. 1, also in the sparkling key of D major, is a perennial favorite from the quartet literature. After the charming variations on the theme of Mozart by Mikhail Glinka, the acknowledged father of Russian classical music, the program concludes with Tchaikovsky's luminous first string quartet.
Mozart's quintet in D major, K593, is the fifth of the composer's six viola quintets, a chamber music genre that he largely pioneered. The genre offers a particularly suitable medium for Mozart's compositional language. Among its myriad wonders, Mozart's music is remarkable for its melodic beauty and textural clarity. The addition of a second viola in these quintets to the standard string quartet broadens the range of melodic, timbral, and textural possibilities. Mozart was, moreover, an avid violist himself, giving him keen insight into the family of instruments and a sensitive ear for inner voices. The Larghetto introduction to the quintet's first movement presents a series of questioning statements from the cello, answered by the violins and violas. The Allegro proper soon begins with a jaunty first theme, marked by chuckling dotted rhythms and syncopations. Before this first theme has fully run its course, Mozart weaves an intricate conversational texture, with each part actively asserting its voice. In fact, a contrasting second theme never truly appears. Rather, Mozart eagerly develops the first theme group's multiple gestures in this manner, all at once to round out the exposition. It's as though we're hearing the musings of a restless imagination unfold in real time. A lucid development section follows. After a standard recapitulation, Mozart reprises the Larghetto introduction. This introspective music leads, just as before, to the jaunty allegro, which stops abruptly after 8 measures. The quintet's second movement is a lush, lovely adagio, rich with melodic allure. It's also a movement of exquisite textural subtlety, as in such moments as a call and response passage between violins and first viola, answered by violas and cello. Or later, when first violin and cello frame the ensemble with florid lines, decorated by ornate trills and turns, buoyed by repeated notes in the middle strings. A graceful minuet follows. The trio section does less to contrast than to reinforce the minuet's sunny demeanor. Following this graceful dance, the quintet concludes with a spirited rondo finale.
Mendelssohn's Opus 44 set of three string quartets, composed between 1837 and 1838, mark a happy time in the composer's life and career. His numerous successes had installed Mendelssohn, not yet 30 years old, as the most renowned musician in Europe. He had been appointed music director of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra and had recently married. The joy that filled these years is nowhere more clearly translated than in the exuberance and brilliant virtuosity of the Opus 44 quartets.
Well, Mendelssohn wrote six string quartets, all of which we feel so lucky to have.
Kalidor Quartet violist Jeremy Barry.
Our string quartet, I think in particular, is very, very passionate about Mendelssohn's music. We find that his writing always comes straight from the heart and that everybody in the audience can relate on some level or every level to the nature of the music in all six of his string quartets. This quartet in particular, the Opus 44 number 1, it very much embodies everything that you would normally associate with Mendelssohn's music. It's incredibly powerfully joyous, and you can always see light in the fast movements. It's bright and cheerful and exciting, where there's always a brisk energy. But the Opus 44s were written in a great joyful period of his life. He had just gotten married the year before. He was appointed conductor of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra recently before he wrote these compositions. He was gaining recognition for his projects reviving old music, like that of Bach. So everything in his life was going really well. He was having success as a composer, and that really comes across in his music in a really obvious way from the very first bar of this quartet. It's a celebration.
Following this euphoric opening, the movement's second theme appears, an understated idea, voiced pianissimo and in rhythmic unison. Yet the effervescent character of what came before seems somehow to still be contained in this contrasting idea, as though Mendelssohn were bringing to light different facets of the same gem. And indeed, this hushed musical idea leads naturally back to the opening melody, tremolandi and all, presented softly at first before erupting in a fortissimo to close the exposition. The ensuing development section dwells for some time on previously heard legato gestures, now overlapping one another like rolling waves and exploring various harmonic territory. Mendelssohn follows this by fragmenting the opening theme and reassembling its shards into a brilliant mosaic. Mendelssohn's penchant for classical tradition is in evidence in the quartet's second movement, a minuet, per the models of Haydn's and Mozart's quartets, rather than the more modern scherzi of Beethoven's. The movement's middle section modulates to gloomy B minor. The graceful quartet note current quickens to eighth notes in the first violin above sustained chords in the lower strings. But, as in the first movement, contrasting ideas here seem to represent two sides of the same musical thought. Even as the mood turns introspective, the music remains serene rather than suggest real turmoil.
And also just has an unbelievably beautiful slow movement in particular, where there's this soaring melody. But if you heard the melody on its own, it would be interesting and it would be nice, but the accompanimental figure always pervading through the movement, starting out in the second violin, creates this exotic atmosphere and texture that just creates this incredible beauty, and very uniquely written in that regard.
The quartet concludes with an ebullient presto finale. The movement begins with a triumphant series of chords, issued by the full ensemble, followed by an animated ascending eighth note triplet run. A cheerful tune follows in the first violin. Second violin and viola accompany with quick repeated notes, recalling the sonic profile of the quartet's opening measures. Variants of these two musical ideas recur throughout the rest of the movement, their constant development dynamically propelling the finale to the work's final cadence. The bright optimism and joie de vivre that marked the time of the quartet's creation abound throughout, and the quartet ends on a spirited note. The 19th century composer Mikhail Glinka is widely considered to represent the beginning of Russian classical music. Rooted from a young age in Russian peasant, liturgical, and other musical traditions, Glinka was captivated by music by the time of his early adolescence. Throughout his teenage years, he would go on to encounter the music of Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Cherubini, and others from Western Europe. In 1828, Glinka set off for a three-year stay in Italy, where he met Donizetti and Bellini, and was subsequently drawn to Italian opera. Glinka mastered the Italian operatic idiom, but by 1833 found himself dissatisfied with composing in a style that felt alien. He endeavored from this point forward to compose, as he put it, in a Russian manner, and thereby find his voice. With a fundamental grasp of the lingua franca of Western European composers, Glinka, largely self-taught, cultivated a musical language that integrated a Russian character with classical and operatic styles. The idiom Glinka developed would be a guiding light to virtually all subsequent 19th century Russian composers, encompassing the nationalist set known as the Five, as well as Tchaikovsky and others. His greatest works are considered foundational to the Russian repertoire. Glinka's variations on a theme of Mozart for solo piano reflect the composer's embrace of Viennese classicism alongside his quest to develop a distinctly Russian style.
Glinka lived in the first half of the 19th century, and he was pretty steeped in Western classical tradition, the music of Haydn, Beethoven, Mozart.
Pianist Michael Brown.
And this piece that he wrote is actually for piano or harp. And it's variations on Mozart from the Magic Flute, but it's not exact. And the themes can't be entirely, it's not like he's taking a Mozart melody and writing variation. That's a pretty common thing that composers do. He's taking sort of the idea of Mozart, the idea of Papageno, and playing around with that. The piece was, I think, lost in a fire and destroyed. The manuscript was destroyed. And Glinka's sister, I believe after he died, wrote the piece down from what she recalled. So in some ways, it's not the most reliable way that we have this piece, but I'm really happy she did because it's a very beautiful piece. It's harmonically pretty static. I mean, he never leaves the key of E flat major, which is pretty rare for a theme in variations, where you often have variations in minor keys or different keys. But here he stays pretty much in one key. But what he does with the texture is incredibly well figured out for the piano. I can't speak of how it lays in the harp, but with its arpeggiation, I would imagine it would sound amazing in the harp as well. So it's an interesting piece to have. I think it will be a very beautiful, there's a simplistic quality to it. It's not the kind of fervent Russian, stark, romantic, passionate kind of piece that you would see later. But there's a sense of simplicity and total classicism from the work.
Which is interesting because we credit him as being like the beginning of Russian classical
right.
music. But like you say, he was so steeped in Mozart and Schubert.
But I think all of these great Russian masters really paid homage to these great masters. They learned so much from, and I'm sure as they were performer composers as well, they must have studied and played all of these pieces as well.
In 1865, Nikolai Rubinstein recruited Tchaikovsky to teach theory at the newly opened Moscow Conservatory. Tchaikovsky's first decade in Moscow was a formative period in his life and career. These years produced Tchaikovsky's first three symphonies, first piano concerto, and other important orchestral pieces, works for the stage, songs, and music for solo piano, and, in the arena of chamber music, his three string quartets. Tchaikovsky's early years in Moscow were also marked by constant financial duress. In March of 1871, Tchaikovsky independently presented a program to introduce new work and to raise personal funds. With no chamber work yet to his credit, Tchaikovsky specially composed his String Quartet No. 1 in D major for the occasion.
And he wrote it quite quickly in a span of 2-3 weeks.
Kalidor Quartet cellist Estelle Choi.
And the circumstances that led to it were that he wanted to showcase his works in a way to increase his reputation and expose his music to the nobility, the Russian nobility. So there was this, the Russian Musical Society, and they arranged a concert, and it was recommended that he scale down an orchestra work because it would have been impossible to pay an orchestra to perform for that. So he pretty much whipped out this beautiful string quartet. It's sort of a classical form, the four movements, the slightly faster movement, first movement, then a slow second movement, then a scherzo movement, and a fast finale. But even from the first performance, it was really well received. One of his critics, who had always been critical about most of his works, actually praised the string quartet.
With few significant Russian precedents in the string quartet genre, Tchaikovsky's Opus 11 betrays Western classical models. Its lyricism evokes Schubert, echoes of whose Death in the Maiden quartet might be heard in the second and third movements. The quartet's finale suggests Tchaikovsky's study of Beethoven's Razumovsky quartets. Violinist Ryan Meehan.
I mean, very much like Brahms in a way, he had a real respect for what his predecessors had created and didn't have an interest in really doing away with the structures that they had built, but rather infusing his personality and the time with which he lived and the styles pervading at the time.
The warmly undulating chords that begin the D major quartet have given the work the occasional nickname accordion. Tchaikovsky sets this opening chorale in a syncopated 9-8, with the beat elusive to the ear. But the gentle touch of the harmony and ensemble texture alleviates any feeling of unsettledness. Legato 16th note runs fuel a transition to the second theme. The second theme isn't too distant in character from the first, but is of hardier stock. The rhythmic ambiguity is dispensed with, the triple meter gate now confidently assured, and the quartet voices the tune mezzo forte, largamente e cantabile. The subsequent development section combines elements of the exposition, but with the legato 16th note motif transformed into a more incisive staccato gesture. It's a dramatic episode, reflecting Tchaikovsky's keen narrative instinct. Those 16th note flourishes color the return of the opening accordion theme, signaling that the recapitulation is not merely a reprise of earlier material, but the arrival stage of the journey.
And I think that bringing back the opening of the first movement with this kind of off-kilter rhythm, which is inherently Russian and Tchaikovsky-esque, It's also the timbre of the sound, and the fact that we're all moving in rhythmic unison is very reminiscent of the Russian choral tradition that is also very pervasive in a lot of his music and a lot of Russian composers.
Based on a folk song, Sidel Vanya, the quartet's Andante Cantabile movement bespeaks a hushed nostalgia.
I think it got to the point where the slow movement became so famous that Tchaikovsky felt like, well, you know, I have other pieces, you know, this is not just that one movement. But yeah, I mean, it's so beautiful and touching. It's him, like, a lot of times you think he's writing for a different instrument. There are periods of time when you feel like it's organ writing, like he's pulling out stops.
The scherzo answers the delicacy of the second movement with a bounding peasant dance. The third movement's folk character extends into the jubilant finale.
And also, it's very symphonic, and what Ryan was talking about, relating it to Brahms. When you play the chamber music of Tchaikovsky, it always feels like he was going for woodwind colors, brass colors, and it's a very thick texture often. So the accompaniment instruments will often be playing two or three notes at once, so it's creating this extremely large texture, which I think you could also say to some extent is iconic of Russian music, that there's something grand at all times.
Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Mozart's String Quintet in D Major, K593, performed by the Amadeus Quartet and Cecil Aronowitz. Mendelssohn's String Quartet in D Major, Opus 44, No. 1, and Tchaikovsky's String Quartet, No. 1, in D Major, Opus 11, performed by the Emerson Quartet. Janáček's Pohádka, performed by David Finkel and Wu Han, and Dvořák's 8 Love Songs, performed by Magdalena Kosena and Graham Johnson, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Glinka's Variations on a Theme of Mozart, performed by Petronell Milan, appears courtesy of Hensler Classics. Schumann's Piano Trio No. 2 in F Major, performed by Juho Pohonien, Arno Sussman, and David Finkel, appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Rachmaninoff's Sing Not to Me, Beautiful Maiden, performed by Joan Rogers and Malcolm Martineau, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Shostakovich's Seven Romances on Poems of Alexander Bloch, performed by Dina Kuznetsova, Georgia Flizanis, Ronald Thomas, and Gilbert Kalish, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.